Okay, here's the hour we've been waiting for. Your phone calls, your miracle stories with our special guest, Greg Braden, on Coast to Coast AM next. Well, it's a very powerful tool once we know how to harness it, Greg, isn't it?
Precisely. I think it's more than a tool. I think it's a way of being, George. And as I said earlier, I know when we do these programs, our time goes by so quickly. And for people who'd like to know more about this Global Coherence Project, the Institute of Heart Math has set up a special site that actually has a little slideshow that that people can go through. And if you go down about the middle of the page on our website, there's a link that will take you directly there. So people can find out how to participate, what it is, maybe answer some of their technical questions about this Global Coherence Project. They're going to begin probably sometime late spring, early summer. Some of the first monitoring devices are going to come online, and there'll be a live readout, so we can watch and see what this global coherence is actually doing.
All right, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Good evening. George, it was a miracle that I got through. That was my miracle story.
All right, I love it.
but I wanted to I read a book back in the 70s when I first moved to California. It was called Three Magic Words by U.S. Anderson, and in it he describes the connection as universal subconscious mind, which means we're all connected. Everything that ever was, is, or will be, and everything that's animal, you know, mineral, vegetable, plant, people, everything, are all connected like the internet. And if you want something to manifest in your life, all you have to do is have a belief that it will happen and have the conviction behind it. Because our thoughts only last for approximately 3 seconds. And you have to repeat them. So it's negative over and over and over again, or it's positive over and over and over again. If you have the conviction behind whatever your belief is, and you did an example of this, by the way, when you had that Ouija board experiment you were going to do.
Right.
If you remember, you were talking about you didn't have any problem with the Ouija board, but you were afraid it might affect people around you.
Yeah, exactly.
So what did you do? You created all these negative things going on, all these people that you described that they were having, because your belief system with the conviction behind it, it happened in your existence. So it's that simple, and all you need is one person to do it. I experiment all the time. After Rita and Katrina, the hurricanes, they were talking about the hurricane season is going to be worse the next year. I said, no way, it ain't going to happen. Forget it. And it didn't. And it didn't this year either.
Yeah,
and
you might have done it.
I told local talk show programs about that. And when the surge started over in Iraq, I said, it's going to work. And then you forget it. It's like ordering out of the old Sears catalog. You order it, you forget about it, and all of a sudden it manifests in your life. And you don't worry about how it gets there, or with a route it takes, or if it's an airplane or truck. It just gets there. And it's not a miracle. You just have a belief system that's going to be there. It's so simple. It's unbelievable. But you got to get the book. Three Magic Words. Look at it, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And Doctor, I love it, because this is exactly what I've been believing since the 70s.
That's by Anderson, too, I believe. I have that book.
Yeah, U.S. Anderson.
Yep, exactly. What's your take on this, Greg?
Well, I agree with everything he's saying, that the key, I know a lot of people are listening tonight, and it's important to be really, really clear what our own science is showing us. And this is the value of marrying science and spirituality. Scientists are now arriving at the understanding. They're saying, okay, the fields, everything's connected. And they're scratching their heads. They're saying, what do we do with it? And the ancient traditions were less concerned with proving that it exists and more about how we apply it in our lives. So the ancient traditions, the spiritual traditions, talk about how we use this field, and the science gives us the nuts and bolts as to why their instructions work. And the what I'd like to emphasize is that rather than believing that it will happen, what the ancients say, what we learn in the monasteries, and what our own science now is showing, is to feel as if it has already happened. So giving thanks of gratitude and appreciation for what has already happened in our hearts, knowing that that's the language that has the non-local effects in the field that create the physical reality.
How important is intent here, Greg?
You know, it depends on how you define intent, George, and this is where there's so many words like will.
Oh, okay, let me give you an example.
Sure.
Someone has evil thoughts about another individual, but never follows through physically, holds back on it, but it's been sent out there. You know what I mean?
If it is a passing thought in a moment of frustration, for example, it probably has very little effect. If it's a thought that is, as we mentioned before the break, of anger, hate, retribution, jealousy, rage, that is harbored and nurtured and nourished over a period of time, it probably has a greater destruction and destructive power inside the body of the person that's having it than it's going to have on the person that it's directed to. And here's exactly the reason why. We could talk about this in another program. What our own science is showing is that for every thought, feeling, emotion, and belief that we create, there's a chemistry in our bodies, George, that matches that. So we literally have what can be considered hate chemistry. A lot of research in cancers are associating cancers with very specific forms of anger, unresolved anger in the person's body. So we all know negative emotions aren't good for us. Now we're getting specifics in terms of how they can affect our lives.
All right, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on with Greg Braden. Hi there.
Hi. Wow, there's so many things I could comment on.
Well, go
even
ahead.
In the last
Enjoy.
Sentence.
Oh. Who are we speaking with?
You're speaking to Vicki.
Hey, Vicki, how you doing?
Oh, real good. I've actually seen many miracles myself that happened even instantaneously as I prayed. And it was from a time of I get my belief from the promises of God, and I've memorized them, so they're always there. When negative things happen, those promises come up to remind me of what God says and that I have his promises, but you have to meditate on it. You're right. You have to hold it in your heart all the time. But what I wanted to say is that there's a lot backing you in this in the Word of God. First of all, he says to meditate on things that are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, and of good report. And if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, then you meditate on these things. Something else that's probably even better that you would want to reflect upon right now is the Lord says, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. And that seems to me to have a direct application to what you're covering right now.
Well, sure. You know, when we go back far enough, as different as the different spiritual traditions appear to be from one another today, when we go back to the root of where they come from, there's a common lineage of wisdom. And what you're saying right now is the language that was used then that describes what it is that the language of science is finding now.
And you're learning to have a practical application of it right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So from my perspective, there are different ways of saying precisely the same thing. And they actually say, when we go to the Lost Gospel of Thomas, for example, is one of the Gnostic texts that was edited from the modern Bible. It's believed to be a record of the actual words of Jesus as they were noted by the disciple, by Thomas. And in more than one place, they actually are giving us the instructions. They're telling us when thoughts and emotions are married into a single potent force, that force, although the emotion is happening in the realm of heaven, that the effect happens in the realm of earth, and they're saying exactly the same thing. So let me ask, what's an example of a miracle that you experienced?
Oh, I prayed for a neighbor when he had a blood clot in his leg, and I spoke to it as if I was speaking to just some spirit that was interfering with the health that God had given him, because we're all supposed to be whole. He says that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, always, and something comes along and tries to disrupt that. So I was speaking order into his body according to the promise of God, and he didn't have to go to the doctor the next day. The thing dissolved. It went away.
Sure, and that's, you know, I hear a lot of that with women with breast cancer who are going in, and actually the day that they go in for their surgery, for mastectomy, they ask the doctor, they'll say, well, can you do one more x-ray just to make sure? And the doctors will do the x-ray, and while their friends and family have knowingly or not, they have used this mode of communicating with the stuff everything is made of, and all of a sudden there's no reason to have the surgery. Doctors call it a miracle. It's only a miracle until we understand our relationship to the field. And what our own science is doing is they're giving us the language and the Western terminology that has been mystical in our most cherished spiritual traditions. And when we understand more of how this field works, we understand more of the right things to do and how to create these effects to consistently and predictably and repeatedly. And I think it brings us all closer. We feel closer to our world and one another and to a higher power.
You know, Greg, if this field exists, and you and I both believe it does, to me, it tells me that something of some tremendous design created it and put it there.
Absolutely, George. And I think the evidence, I mentioned this a little earlier, the evidence, mainstream scientists are now devising mathematic proofs to explore whether or not this is an intentional field. And the bottom line is that the statistics are more in favor of this field being intentional than it being a random or just a fluke. And in that intentionality, it implies an intelligence that underlies that. And where and how that intelligence comes about is something I think that's what I think this time in history is all about. We're finding that we're part of a greater existence, and that's what changes everything.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on with Greg Braden on Coast to Coast.
Hi, I'm Laura from North Carolina.
Hey, Laura.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. I wanted to ask Greg if he thought that if we could ever become so highly spiritually evolved that we could just separate our spirits from our bodies if we wanted to, that is if we were very ill or so aged or so heartbroken and unhappy that we could just walk out of our bodies instead of waiting to die naturally.
You know, it's an interesting question, and it's not as far-fetched as it might sound to some people, because in other cultures this is precisely what they do.
Oh, really?
They do this in Native American tradition. Not all Native American, but some Native American traditions. The first time I saw it was in Egypt, and I saw the instructions for how this is done inscribed in a limestone tablet about 300 feet underneath the surface of the desert outside of Cairo in a temple that had just been unearthed. And the translator that was with us, I asked, you know, what is it that we're seeing here? And it was actually the description of, it's called letting go. To be in this world right now requires a focus of holding our awareness present in holding it in this physical body. And we're so accustomed to it, Laura, that we don't even know we have that focus. But there is a in other words, it's just so much a part of who we are. But there is a technique or techniques where when someone, they don't have to be sick, they don't have to be, they can just be tired of being in this world, and they go into an altered state, they let go of that focus, and when they let go, they end their physical life here, and that essence moves on. So the answer, that's a long answer, a short question.
Yeah, it was a beautiful answer. It's a beautiful, I would like to have the instructions.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
where
well,
are
well,
the instructions,
places,
Greg?
Where, one of the places where you see it referenced is in a, it is in the Egyptian Book of Living and Dying, in the A-N-I, Ani Papyrus. If you're familiar with the A-N-I, it's pronounced Ani Papyrus, or the Ani Tablets. Is where they show the instructions, and they show actually the steps that we go through to separate our soul from our body. And the flip side of that is that many of the lost texts that are now being recovered show that our bodies and souls are separate from one another. And when the first of our kind was created, that the bodies were created, but they had to change the formula for the body to hold the power of our soul in this world because the essence of our soul is such a powerful essence, not any physical vehicle could hold it. So there is another book that is entitled The Other Bible. It was put out by HarperCollins. It's a collection of edited texts from the Gnostic, Jewish, and Christian traditions that didn't make it into the mainstream canon. And in those texts, and some of the Hebrew texts, they actually describe how difficult it was with the first of our kind to create a vehicle, in other words, to get the genetic formula right to hold the power of the spirit in this physical world. It's fascinating.
Next up, Wild Card Line, your turn.
Yeah, George?
Yes, sir.
Do you want to do an experiment real quick? Because this guy is talking about everything I've been doing for 10 days, and I got records and I got audio, video, and I can't send them through the email. It won't let me. But if you want to do an experiment, I've got 6 pages in my fax machine, and either your fax machine is going to break or my fax machine is going to break, and that's an experiment. Do you want to do it?
No, what do you mean it's going to break? Explain that.
I don't know. I've been trying to get you my evidence for 10 days, and I can't get my email to take it. And every time it'll send an email if I don't attach my evidence. But if I attach my evidence, it won't send it. And I can't understand why. I've done it 1,000 times. And I got 6 pages of evidence, but are handwritten notes. And I've been writing things down before people have been saying them. Some things on there you're going to see happen after you get the facts. And some things have already happened. Some things are going to mean something, and some things are not going to mean anything at all. But it's all going to be true, and it's all going to be false. And if you understand that, you're better off than I am, because I'm so confused right now. And but I want to do a test, and I've got some fax machine ready to fax. If you'll give me a fax number, I'll send them to you.
What, I tell you what there, Michael. I can't give you a fax number over the air, or I'll get stuck with zillions of faxes from all over the place.
Believe it or not, George, I knew you were going to say that.
Okay. I had no choice. But it was an interesting concept. Have you done experiments recently, Greg, in this area? We have, constantly.
I know that you have. And, you know, the field that we're talking about, it's so fundamental to everything that we're talking about. It's the reason that remote viewing works the way it does, and that's why there are no secrets. It makes some people crazy, and it thrills other people to no end. It's why I tell author friends of mine, I say the moment you get an idea for a book, or musician friends, when you get an idea for a song, if you've got that idea, it's out there and other people are working on it just as you are. And if you don't act on it now, you're going to see your book show up on Amazon, you know, within 6 months, and it was your idea. And the same with music. So we do experiments, anecdotally that way. I'm not seriously involved with any research projects using these right now.
Quick one from you, Wildcard Line. You're on with us. Hello there.
George and Greg, beautiful topic, extremely relevant to the issues that we're facing in the
Indeed.
World today.
Indeed.
First, I wanted to comment on, Greg, you were talking about using gratitude as a tool to enhance the effectiveness of prayer, is what I think you're getting at. And that is similar to the Hawaiian concept of what's called ano ano.
Absolutely.
That the fruit is already in the seed. That everything, and this can be used by all listeners, I used it to make this phone call tonight, that simply thank God for what we want, that what we want we already have, and that all we need to do is nurture that seed, and the fruit is already there, and we will have it. Greg, my question to you is with regards to using some of this ancient knowledge to not only prove from a theoretical standpoint, but also to gain knowledge from a practical standpoint with regards to our physical world, such as we're facing this sun...
Solars?
Thank you, 24, that's going on right now,
yep.
And how certain ancient... ancient cultures had knowledge of this and whatnot. And the Hawaiians, this is also with regards to string theory, had a concept of aka chords, a.k.a.
I'm very familiar with those.
I'll let you answer both of those when we come back, Greg. Well, I'll be back in Los Angeles for our Monday program, and our guest will be L.A. Marzulli, The Luciferian Conspiracy. We'll be back with final phone calls with Greg Braden on Coast to Coast AM. Greg, let's go back to you and see if you can react to the last caller talking about those, aka chords?
I made just a couple of notes, and I'm not sure that the last comment was actually a question, but the
more of a comment, yeah.
Well, the caller, he was speaking about, first of all, about the power of gratitude, and it's interesting, and this is the reason we wanted to lay out some of this information first so we could tie back into it through the evening. The researchers at the Institute of Heart Math have found that in the English language, the words gratitude and appreciation are the two words that best describe the optimum feeling that we can have in our hearts that create that coherence between the heart and the mind, or the heart and the brain that we were talking about. In other words, every moment of every day,
Our heart is sending a signal to our brain, and it's either flooding our bodies with life-affirming or life-denying chemistry. Gratitude and appreciation are the words that describe the feeling that sends the optimal signals to our brain to tell our brain to give us the powerfully enhanced immune systems and DHEA levels that are sky high. And this is what's been documented under laboratory conditions. So the ancients, they didn't say it in technical words. They just said, feel these feelings, and you'll create good things in your life. And now we know that this is why they were saying these things. We also know that when we have those experiences in our heart, as we mentioned earlier, we're creating the electrical and the magnetic fields in our heart that extend both into the physical matter, to the atoms, as well as into the quantum field of possibilities. And the quantum fields of possibilities appear to congeal, George, around the template or the blueprint of these fields to create in our world what it is that we just claimed in our hearts. And the beauty is we don't have to know any of it. We just give thanks of gratitude and appreciation for the healing that's already happened, the abundance that's already in our lives, the relationships that already support us, the peace in our communities or our families or our nations. And in that way, we're creating that effect that shows us precisely what it is that we've claimed.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Wildcard line, take it away.
Hi. Is it me?
Yes, me.
Oh, hi, Greg. Hi, George.
Hey. Who are we speaking to?
Oh, this is Julie. I'm in Oregon.
Hey, Julie.
Hi. My question for Greg tonight was, has he ever run across someone who perhaps accidentally taps into this energy and levitates, or is, you know, levitates? That's my question, I guess.
Well, first of all, I think it's impossible to accidentally tap into it. It's our birthright. It's part mm-hmm. of who we are. We may or may not be aware of it. And what we're finding is that, in my experience, the only time people can tap this field is when they're ready to experience it. The only levitation I've ever seen is in the monasteries in Tibet. I haven't seen it here in North America. I've seen people that claim to, and I've never really been able to validate that that's what was happening. But we have seen it in the monasteries in Tibet, and as I mentioned earlier, this is the value of going into a living culture rather than seeing it on a temple wall. I could ask them, how did you do that? And the bottom line is they say they create a feeling. It's all done through a feeling.
Right, right. And extreme joy or extreme sorrow.
Well, when we find these things historically, and this is interesting, Julia, it typically comes up in what are called ecstatic experiences, usually in religious or spiritual settings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason for that is because the diversions are absent that keep us from that kind of focus. So I'm not saying, I don't think we have to go into a cave and live there for 20 years or into a monastery in the middle of nowhere at 18,000 feet above sea level to have these experiences. It's just those conditions are set up for that. But
and you think some people are more in tune with it than other people?
They are, but, you know, our conditioning is so powerful. Even people that honestly believe 100% in their conscious minds of the connections that we're talking about tonight, what we're finding is the subconscious conditioning in our culture is so powerful, and that we are so powerfully conditioned to believe that we are powerless, that we are victims, and that we are disconnected from the world around us, that there's a lot of that we have to heal to have these kinds of experiences.
Mm. So no accidents, huh?
I think if someone has these, they could happen spontaneously, and what it means is that consciously or not, you've arrived at, or whoever's having the experience has arrived at a point in their lives where they're ready to experience the fullness of our relationship to the world. You know, this is the beauty. When we look at quantum particles, and we've talked about this in other programs, quantum particles do seemingly miraculous things. They can be in many places at once. They communicate with themselves over long distance. They're not limited by time. They can experience the past as well as the future. And what the scientists now are asking is, if quantum particles can do that, and we're made of those particles, then why can't we do the same thing? And what it appears the answer to that is,
is that we are governed in part by our beliefs. Some of them are conscious, some are subconscious, some are conditioned by our culture and our family, some by personal experience. And as we come to the point individually and collectively where we heal those experiences, it opens the door to the fullness of our experience and empowers us to participate. Now, I'm going to use that word very consciously. It's not about control or manipulation or imposing our will, but to participate in the way this world unfolds. And that goes from the peace between nations and the way that this world unfolds over these next few years to the healing in our bodies.
All right, back to the phones again. Wildcard line. Hello there. Where are you calling from?
Giovanni calling from Miami.
Hey, Giovanni, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to ask Greg if how do you manifest or re-experience a spiritual experience using heart coherence? Because I use biofeedback. I don't know if you heard of the Wild Divine game or something like that.
I have heard Wild Divine, absolutely.
And I've had a pretty incredible experience using that. And it was a couple of years ago, but I'm still, like, trying to figure out how it happened. I was for real, I was doing a heart meditation. It's called the heart breath or something like that.
Yes, yes.
And it was focused on compassion through the heart. And when that happened, I saw gold light going over my body. And then a being came to me, and it was Jesus Christ. I'm a Buddhist, so when I saw this, I was pretty amazed, you know.
So, so the question is, how do you recreate the experiences? Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, it is.
First of all, for listeners that may not be familiar, Wild Divine is an interactive game that was created a few years ago. I actually had a prototype that I was asked to evaluate, where a number of different feedback techniques, ranging from breath to pulse sensors, are used to allow you to move through progressively higher stages in the game. So only when your heart rate gets to a certain place or you breathe a certain way will the sensor pick that up and then allow you to go to the next level. And the experiences that people have along the way, they're certainly individual experiences. I would imagine to recreate that, now that you've opened the door to the possibility, it would be relatively easy to go back and have the same experience, or it may happen spontaneously. Once we have the experience and we know it's possible, that seems to free us to have those experiences spontaneously, maybe in our dreams or... You know, you might be walking through a forest not thinking about these things, and you look at the beauty of the sky and the world around you, and in that elation, those experiences happen spontaneously. But I think that we have the experiences we need when they're important for us to have them, and if you never have that experience again, it may be that one time was all you needed to tell you whatever it was that experience told you and what it meant to you in your life.
All right, let's go to our west of the Rockies, Greg. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
George.
Yeah, hi.
Okay, Steve here in Campbell, California.
I'm
so glad to get in touch with you guys.
Sure.
I have an engineering degree, and my freshman year physics course, the first day was the Michelson-Morley experiment.
Really? Really?
Yes,
wow.
And I thought to myself, why are they saying you can't do something the first day?
How interesting.
It always haunted with me.
Well, so that was, you had a progressive science course that they're telling you about that. Did they also tell you about the follow-up experiment in 1986?
Well, no, this was before 1986.
Oh, okay.
But the big question that I have, has anybody done any historic research on who Michelson and Morley were religiously and politically?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know who they were religiously. I know that... And I don't know who they were politically. I know that they were very innovative. I think the experiment was a good experiment. I think it was poorly interpreted. And the reason I say that is because the same experiment was recreated with better equipment, and it produced the results that they had expected and predicted a little over 100 years prior. So they were disappointed. They had first done this experiment in 1881, and they did it for a public audience again in 1887. Had the same experience both times. So, if,
If you're asking if they had a certain bias toward the existence or non-existence of the field, I can't answer that question. It's a good question.
Okay. Also, another observation. This is not as miraculous as healing, but I've often seen that at the craps tables in Vegas, when a table gets hot, suddenly the probabilities go out the window, and people start winning like crazy.
Yeah.
And then the pit boss will show up, and he'll act this very cold, authoritative figure and start standing around people, and suddenly
he's the cooler.
Crapping out.
Yeah, he's the
cooler. And I'm just thinking, is there just postulates that are being thrown out there?
No, there is an effect, and studies have shown that the effect is consistent. It's predictable because these are anecdotal, impractical applications showing where the discussion we're having tonight touches every aspect of our lives. Everything is connected. We are influencing the world around us. If people are saying, "I hope I get a number when I throw these dice," they're probably not going to have the effect. If they're feeling the elation of having two or three numbers that have already come up, then that expectation certainly sets up a bias in the field, and that's what the experiments show. That is how we are actually influencing the world around us, and having a pit boss come over kind of throws a damper on the whole thing.
Let's go to Vancouver International Line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi, George and Greg. This is Candy.
Hi, Candy.
And Candy?
Candy.
Candy, it's good to hear your voice.
Thanks. I live on the edge of the wilderness up here. It's just wonderful. I'm so, so thrilled to hear this program. You've described a focus that I've had ever since I was a little girl, actually. And I just wanted to ask about if you've done any experiments with animals. I work with animals, animal behavior, police dogs. I work with, I help them to track, actually, and do some tracking with the police and whatnot.
And when you say work with animals, in what area, Candy?
Well, tracking, in the sense of communicating with the animals. They have to describe what they're doing, and I have to understand what they're doing, what they see, where they're going, and to find lost people, basically, for search and rescue work.
Have you gotten into the animal area, Greg? I'm not sure you have.
I personally have not done the research, but I'm in touch with a lot of people. Obviously, when we do this work, a lot of people come into the fold, and there are some very good studies that are showing that, certainly animals are very much a part of the field. What sets them apart from us is they do not seem to have the judgment or the bias that we do, so they're much more open and attuned to the field. And some of the experiments, you may have heard of some of these, George, or maybe some of your guests have talked about the experiments that were done where dogs were monitored in the home while their owners were in the office at work.
Mm-hmm.
And the dogs would be sleeping or eating or whatever they were doing. When the owner began packing the desk at work and packing the briefcase and had the intention of coming home, the dogs walked over, and they were at the door waiting for their owners to be there before, in some cases 30, 40 minutes before the owners ever got there, because in the field they knew that they were already connected. They already knew that that was happening. The Institute of Heart Math did a wonderful experiment that's up on their website, where an individual, a young boy who was attuned to a dog named Mabel, and I met Mabel before she left this world, so I know who she is. They were in separate rooms, and they were being monitored. And when the boy walked into the room, immediately their heart rhythms sync together, and they become very attuned to one another in the room. And when the boy in his mind says, "I'm going to get up and leave the room," he doesn't vocalize it. He hasn't even moved yet. He has the intention that he's going to do it. That intention is enough to disrupt that coherence between the boy and the dog, and the dog's heart rhythms go all over the place because he knows he's about to lose his friend. He's going to be alone. And for these things to happen, there must be a conduit that carries our inner experiences into the world and between us. And this is one of the ways, indirectly, this field is being validated.
It happens with plants, too.
Absolutely. That was the work of Cleve Baxter, who I had the opportunity to spend some time with.
And Christopher Bird, I believe, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Cleve Baxter was, was doing the first polygraph experiments for the military back in the 1940s. When he was working with plants, had his plants hooked up to a primitive polygraph, an insect, I believe it was a spider, crawled across his lab desk. And even though he never killed the spider, in his mind, he had the intention to do it, and the plants went nuts. And the readings were on the screen, and he said, wow, maybe there's something going on here. And that led to Peter Tompkins' book, The Secret Life of Plants, which then led to the research and a subsequent book, The Secret Life of Yourselves, that didn't, in my opinion, didn't get the press and the visibility that it should have, but it's very good work.
Fascinating. Let's go east of the Rockies. One or two more questions. We're done. Go ahead.
Hey, George, Greg, good morning.
Well, good morning. Who are we speaking with?
John in Atlanta.
Okay, we have a minute and a half to go. Go ahead, John.
Okay, well, I could say so many things. But, Greg, I think it was you that was on the program maybe 5 years ago. I was in about a half-conscious state, and I believe you were talking about the DNA molecule, the DNA strands being unraveled in certain states of mind. They would become less wrapped.
I remember that night, and it was 2004. I remember that night precisely.
Yes, and I thought that was fascinating. I believe you said something about our physicality becoming less dense when our DNA strands become less tight in a certain state of mind, in a peaceful state of mind.
Now, what did you mean by that, Greg? Because we only have 30 seconds left.
Again, this, a gentleman named Roland McCready had published the studies, and these studies, we've got the links on our website as well under references.
Which may have crashed tonight, by the way.
We gave them a heads up, so they got some extra horsepower out there, some extra bandwidth. But the bottom line is what they found was that in the presence of positive emotions that we call gratitude, appreciation, love, and compassion, the DNA strands in the cells relax. And when they're relaxed, we have enhanced immune systems, high hormone levels of DHEA, life-affirming hormones, and in the presence of anger, jealousy, hate, rage.
Well, the field, Gregory, is immense. We're out of time, my friend. Greg Braden, our guest, to the science of miracles. That's how fast it went by.
Oh, it did. I was looking. I thought we had another 5 minutes. All right.
That's it. Thanks, my friend. For Karis Coburn, Wayne Roberts, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Gina Salvati, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesor, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there in Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.